the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Cause I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bear, man. I breathe mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Kaharo, Pangaro, Akaro, Maruweka, Taramo, Benmo, Pangaro, Hararikari, Wakawira, Mataka, Tikara, Bonapai, New Hakawama, Hakamaru, Hurawai, Kakamonui, Hokanui.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Philippa, and today we'll hear about some of those towns from author Hugh Dickey. Hugh has always had an interest in population studies and a passion for demographic research. His book, The Growth of New Zealand Towns, published in 2017, is a snapshot of the development of 64 of our cities and towns from their beginnings. Learning about their history and the reasons for their growth, or otherwise, gives us some insight into and a wider perspective of the many changes taking place in Aotearoa, New Zealand, today. We, along with many other countries in today's world, face a changing demographic, with an aging population of alarming proportions, a low birth rate, high immigration, homelessness, and the dynamics of future climate change. Now, while some towns appear to have fallen into permanent decline, others, having borne the impact of a catastrophic event or economic downturn, have sought innovative solutions to reinvent themselves and create a sustainable future. Meticulously researched, Hugh Dickey's book contains many interesting facts and some surprising findings, too. Welcome, Hugh. It's good to have you on the program today.
Good to be here.
Now, perhaps you could start by telling us about how you came to write this particular book, because I know you've written other books as well. But
well, I've always been interested in demographic research, but basically have never had time over the years to do much research until 2 or 3 years back when my wife was not well and I was not able to go on planned overseas trips for my work. I decided that I was going to do some research. I wanted to find out the size of our towns way back when, because I suspected that probably some of the official data that was available wasn't really giving the correct picture, and I was certainly right in that respect.
Yes. So they were pretty far out, some of those statistics.
Well, it depends, of course, on definition. Everything is how you define it. And suppose, for example, you wanted to know how big Auckland was 150 years ago. If you looked up the 1867 census results, you'd find that it said we had 11,000 people. But, in fact, in those days, the numbers were only counted by electoral districts, not all the tiny little suburbs and areas they are today.
So the boundaries have enlarged?
Well, yes, but as well, that just included what we would call the CBD today, just the central Auckland East and West electorates. But there were, in fact, some suburban electorates. There was Parnell, there was Newton, there was Onehunga, and the one with a strange name, Pensioner Districts.
Where was that?
Oh, well, that was actually people who were pensioned off from the British Army and sent out to Auckland because of the imagined threat there might be of Maori attacking from the south.
Like the Fencibles and Howick?
Yes. They were the Defensibles, and so some of them settled in Howick, some in Panmure, some in Otahu, and some in Onehunga. And they, for some reason unknown to me, were given their own special electoral district. So when you added up those four suburban electorates, you found there was another 10,000 people. But then there was more as well, because looking at some of the other electorates, such as Raglan, you'd initially think, well, that had nothing to do with Auckland.
Exactly, yeah.
Until you looked at the boundaries and found it started in Ponsonby and went all the way to Taranaki. Everything, in fact, to the west of the Great South Road and the Waikato River.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, yes. And the same with Franklin. Started in Newmarket and went down past Gisborne. Everything to the east of the Great South Road and Waikato River, because in those days, almost nobody lived in the Auckland province. So it gave you the total population of those electoral districts, but how did you know how many lived in Auckland and how many lived in the distant areas? Well, there was only one way to find out, and that was to photocopy the old electoral rolls and go through them name by name by name with their location of where they lived and work out which ones were in the area we'd call Auckland now and which ones were beyond. So suppose half of the Raglan electorate or a third of it lived in the Auckland part, we would assume a third of the total population therefore lived in the Auckland area.
Yes.
So we did that rather laborious exercise, and lo and behold, up turned another 8,000 people we could claim lived in Auckland. So really, the population of Auckland back then was 29,000, not 11,000, as the published figures would show, because no suburbs were included. And that was common basically throughout New Zealand. Not just the big cities, but even the smaller places like Timaru.
Yes.
For a different reason there, of course, because the government started a town, and right next door, the Rhodes brothers started another town called Rhodestown. And it ended up there were more people living in Rhodestown than in Timaru. And so the official data only includes the government town.
Well, it's very confusing to most people. Very confusing.
Yeah, so if you look up early census data, you get you can draw wrong conclusions simply because people don't realise the boundaries of the area. Of course, on the other hand, there were some places where the population was claimed to be far higher than census data shows it really was. I mean, classic examples are gold mining areas. Thames was one of them. And if you look up pretty much any book on Thames or Google article, you'll find that they said they had 18,000 people living there. But in fact, it never had more than about 10,000, according to the accurate census data.
Well, a lot of them would have been transient, with the gold rush and all this sort of thing, or...?
No, most of them in Thames weren't so transient as they were in the southern gold areas, because it wasn't alluvial gold where they moved around to find it. It was basically in the quartz rock, so they had to live there.
Well, I was going to ask you a little about the history, because, as I understand it, the majority of settlers who came to New Zealand in the 19th century chose to live near or in urban centres. Because, I mean, they'd come from crowded populations. And
that's right.
They were used to that, more than country life.
Most of them, of course, came from Britain, which was a majority urban society from about 1850 onwards. And surprisingly, about 70% of the early European settlers up till the late 1850s actually settled in the four largest centres. It wasn't till a few years later they began to disperse, some of them, or proportionately disperse, and the other areas of New Zealand were opened up.
So the way that influenced how the towns developed, where they chose to settle, different parts according to what the areas had to offer.
Well, that's true. Auckland, of course, was capital up until about 1866, and so that brought a lot of settlers in. It was also the only major settlement that was not sponsored by a particular commercial venture. Wellington was the other big early one that was had huge numbers come in from the New Zealand company and settlement there.
Yes.
The others were later. Christchurch was later. Developed very much there with the pastoral industry as it spread in the Canterbury Plains. And Dunedin, of course, was born out of gold. It was very small before gold was discovered.
Yes. Now, perhaps we could talk about each of the five cities, the five main cities. And, of course, we'd have to start with Auckland, with its relentlessly exponential growth.
True.
I saw from your statistics that Auckland's only ever have two little blips in its growth pattern, little dips. So I suppose the 1920s with the Depression, and before that, would that have been before or after the
Yes, its growth slowed in the Depression because there was a tendency of people to move into more rural areas where they could be self-sufficient, although the population did keep growing slowly. The only real decline Auckland ever experienced was in the Great Depression back in the late 1880s, and they lost 14,000 people out of Auckland, and Auckland was more severely hit than the rest of the country in that Great Depression time. But apart from them, it's just seen growth right through until now.
Unstoppable.
Well, unfortunately, it's become what's known as a primate city, which is much larger than the next one. In fact, Auckland now is big as the next seven centres combined. And when you have that economic...
That's mind-blowing. When you realise it's mind-blowing.
It is, yes. We have one of the highest proportions in the world of people living in its largest city.
Yes.
Where we're about fourth or fifth on the list.
Gosh, yes. And we are, I believe, the most ethnically diverse city in the Western world.
Well, yes, that's certainly
extraordinary. Now, Windy Wellington.
Well, yes, of course, Wellington got a great impetus when the capital was moved there, and it grew very steadily. It was the only place in New Zealand that wasn't even affected by that Great Depression in the late 1880s. It just kept on growing. Its growth has definitely slowed. It hit its peak percentage of New Zealand population in 1945.
Oh, really?
And ever since then, although it's continued to grow in numbers, as a percent of New Zealand, it's constantly declining.
Well, it's geographically confined in one sense, although, of course, it's spread out, you know, Porirua and Hutt Valley and all that. So, and I suppose it'll just keep, people will commute more.
Yes, but even taking in the commuting belt, it has not increased its proportion of New Zealand's population. Of course, that's all been sucked up by Auckland, which now has about a third of our country's population.
Yes.
But Christchurch is the same.
Yes, I was going to say, shaky Christchurch. Now, that was built on a swamp, a lot of it. And that's the problem, isn't it?
Yes. It did take off with a huge boost in agricultural products and pastoral products in the early days, and became the biggest export port. It was really became bigger than Auckland. In fact, Dunedin and Christchurch both were bigger than Auckland for nearly 10 years from the late or the mid-1870s. Auckland was relegated to second and third, in fact, in those times. But ever since, of course, it's been the biggest. But Christchurch has... It levelled off its growth, but then, in more recent times, since the war, in fact, it has caught up almost with Wellington before the earthquake.
Yes.
Took a temporary hit, lost about 1,500 people, not actually as many as you'd think, after the earthquake.
I was surprised about that.
Yes, because, of course, when the next census came in 2013, quite a number had resettled.
Yes.
So, yeah, it didn't lose much, and now it's actually catching up again on Wellington, so eventually it will probably.
Well, they seem to be very stoic and loyal to their city.
Plus, it has a very strong manufacturing base too.
Yes.
Much more so than Wellington. And I think that's helped it.
And, of course, Hamilton.
Well, yes, Hamilton has changed the landscape. We used to talk about the four main centres for so many years because Dunedin, of course, was well ahead of Hamilton, built on the gold, of course, and became New Zealand's financial capital. But since 1886, relatively, Dunedin has just kept on and on and on declining in its proportion of New Zealand's population. It's levelled off in size, but Hamilton has passed it considerably now.
Yes.
As has, of course, Tauranga now. So you can't talk about the four main centres anymore because there aren't.
Well...
You either have to talk about the three main centres, Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, which are much bigger than the rest.
Yes.
Or you have to extend out to six and include Hamilton, Tauranga, and Dunedin as well.
Yes, well, of course, now people can live in Hamilton and, you know, drive to Auckland to work, I suppose, although it
sounds
challenging to do that, but...
Yes, but it does have a very strong industrial base.
Yes.
And the other thing about Hamilton, it's the youngest city in New Zealand in terms of age.
Oh, really?
And so it's got a good future in that sense.
Oh.
Whereas Tauranga is relatively old, so...
Now, what about the retirement capital of the North Island?
Oh, Tauranga.
Tauranga, yes.
Yes, well, Tauranga has benefited that from that, but much more than that, actually. Of course, once it was chosen as the port for the forest industries after the Second World War, that's what really saw it bloom. And it has taken more and more of our export trade. Proportionally, it's taken trade away from Auckland, which is much more congested. So it's grown basically on the back of the port trade and intense horticulture in the surrounding area, plus, of course, the bonus of the good climate and the retirement people.
Yes, yes. Well, and of course, unfortunately, or fortunately in some ways, Dunedin has been demoted, so to speak, but then maybe that's a saving grace and it won't have all the problems that these fast-growing places have
well,
got.
Well, yes, that's true. It's still growing slowly, but relatively speaking, of course, declining.
Yes. Now, some towns have fallen into decline and others haven't. They've continued to prosper. But could you tell us about some of the towns that have declined and why they've declined?
Well, in fact, there are a surprising number of towns that have declined in recent years. Actually, about 40% of the towns in the book, that's the biggest 64,
yes,
have declined in recent years. And it will go up to over half in time to come. The more isolated they are, generally the more they have declined, like Taumarunui, Wairoa and so on. There are several reasons, actually. One of them is that from the late 60s onwards, the influence of television on young people meant that a lot of them were no longer just content to live in the town they grew up in. They saw the attractions and so on in the bigger centres, so you got a lot of young people moving away. And then, of course, inevitably, there were closures of freezing works or timber mills, and they were hard to replace in some of those smaller towns.
Yes.
And then you also had a huge influence of government policy. For example, closing down of a lot of government departments and centralising them to the bigger places.
Yes.
Which benefited places like Hamilton, but certainly not Tikawiti or Taumarunui. And then there was removal of agricultural subsidies, so it meant that a lot of farms had to merge to make them economical. And that meant a loss of rural population around, so therefore the town suffered in the retail sector. And then another factor that's not often realised is that because a lot of young people moved away, there were not a lot of people of childbearing age left in the town.
Oh, well, this has happened in many places overseas as well.
And so, therefore, of course, there wasn't the natural growth.
Yes.
In fact, in quite a number of places, there was a natural decrease, more deaths than births.
Yes.
And that will happen more and more as our population ages. And and so those are all reasons why a lot of towns have declined. It's become normal now. It used to be almost regarded as a shame if a town declined. They thought there was something wrong with it. But now people just, I think, have to accept that it's part of the how things are.
And then there's the other extreme. There's the rock star towns.
Yes.
And, of course, Queenstown comes to mind.
Yes, well, Queenstown is one of the fastest growing places in New Zealand. In fact, it's the second fastest growing place, and that since the investment in tourism in the mid 60s has seen just exponential growth, and it's got no sign of decreasing, based on tourism, obviously. In fact, tourism has been the saviour of a number of places that would otherwise have declined even more.
Yes.
And the other one, the one that's the fastest growing, even faster than Queenstown, is nearby Wanaka, and that has had a meteoric rise in the last few years. So they've all done very well based on tourism. But there are others that aren't necessarily tourism areas, although partly, like...
Well, what about the North Island?
Well, the fastest growing town on the North Island is Kerikeri, and that is the airport for the Bay of Islands, so there's tourism generated there and local tourism as well. But, of course, there's been a big horticultural industry there. It's become a very popular retirement area, and dare I say it, it has drawn growth from less desirable areas nearby.
Yes.
Where perhaps people would rather live in Kerikeri. So that's really boosted.
And it's got an interesting history the early settlers who were attracted to Kerikeri from China.
Well, yes. There was a very entrepreneurial land agent in Kerikeri who realised the potential of the soils in the area for citrus production. And so he advertised overseas as well as in New Zealand and got a lot of response from British settlers in China who realised their time there was up. So they decided to come and start citrus fruit farms. And they were, by all accounts, a very unusual bunch. They were used to everyone kowtowing to them, having servants and so on. And they were so eccentric that at that stage, Kerikeri was in fact known as the largest outdoor asylum in the empire.
Well, I can quite imagine of this.
It's grown well since then.
Yes. And it's quite a cultured town
as well. Remarkably so, yes.
You know, it's sort of unique in that way. Up there on its own, up north.
Yes, very much so. And so those are probably the fastest growing places in the country. Tauranga, of course, the fastest growing of the cities.
Yes.
Some of them, as you say, definitely going backwards, have lost a third of their population in recent years, like Taumarunui and Tokoroa especially. They thought they were going to be the next city in New Zealand.
Oh, but Kawerau is growing again, isn't it? Or is it just that people are buying cheaper properties
there? Probably buying cheaper properties, so I dare say we won't see the decline there we have up until recently, but there's been a big decline there, mainly through economic decisions to close different parts of the mills, different machines and so on, and it causes all kinds of difficulties
in the town. Tell us about the town and country divide, the division of urban growth between the two.
Right. Well, traditional wisdom has it that New Zealand became a majority urban society in 1911. But unfortunately, the official statistics back in those days only counted people living in city or borough boundaries. They didn't include people living in the surrounding areas as suburbs. So when you include those, you find that New Zealand actually became a majority urban society as far back as 1881, which was the same year as Australia, and only behind the UK in the early 1850s. So we were probably the third country in the world to have more people living in towns than in the country.
And yet we have the opposite idea about ourselves. We're, you know, quite delusional, aren't we?
Oh, yes. we're country yokels.
Yes.
In fact, as we saw earlier at the beginning, far more people lived in towns. Then there was a movement towards the country as the countryside opened up. But as early as 1881, we still had more in towns. It kind of explodes one of the myths about early New Zealand, I think.
Now, before we finish, I understand you go around and you do give talks in retirement villages and different places.
Probus clubs, Rotary clubs, all sorts of
clubs. So do you go all around New Zealand? Do you actually travel?
No, I do mainly in Auckland, but I do travel a little beyond Auckland.
Yes. And with your book, The Growth of New Zealand Towns, can people obtain it from?
Well, you can get it online at places like Fish Pond, or you can get it direct wholesale from myself.
Yes.
By emailing me, but you probably find it online.
Online, all right. Mm. So if anybody wants to find your book, they can find it online. Mm. Oh, I actually found it through Grey Power.
Yes, well, I've had quite a good response from Grey Power magazine.
Well, look, Hugh, thank you so much for coming on the program today. We've enjoyed it. It's very interesting talking to you.
Right.
So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm now going to have to read the notes because Nancy's not here. Well, the future events. Club Modern is holding a cocktail party at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday the 6th of October. This event will take place at Highwick House, 40 Gillies Avenue, Newmarket. Now, this will be a night of frivolous sophistication with elegant music and entertainment in one of Auckland's most prestigious heritage homes. Included in your ticket price are three vintage-style cocktails and delicious hors d'oeuvre. So ladies, get out your favourite elegant dress and gentlemen, do your sartorial best and come and join us for an amazing night celebrating Auckland's heritage. Tickets are $57, available from Eventfinder. Now, the Fab Bric-a-Brac Market is being held at the Columba Centre, 40 Vermont Street, Ponsonby, on Saturday, the 29th of September, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is a market for sewers, makers, creators, and lovers of fabric. Please come along and support Mercy Hospice at this event. And finally, Planet FM needs your vote. Every year, Planet FM runs a competition encouraging people to vote for New Zealand's Bird of the Year. It's a bit of fun to promote our native fauna. And this year, Planet FM is backing the Kotare Kingfisher. We would love your support. Please tell your friends, whānau, and listeners that a vote for Kotare is a vote for Planet FM. From October the 1st to the 15th this year, people can head to birdsoftheyear.org.nz and cast their vote. Or if you want more information, or if you have any great ideas for spreading the word, please contact Joe at 104.6planetfm.org.nz. And we will finish our program today with some music. I would like to dedicate this program to the Christchurch Rebuild, with Troy Scott singing Good Old Canterbury.
Just started to rebuild the past. When we try to overlook the facts, the walls came back tumbling down. And now all that's left is our shattered town. The cathedral church that once stood tall is now broken into pieces, down it did fall. The hundreds and thousands of buildings that scatter the floor has shaken our red and black hearts to the core. No more, no more, no more. We've had too much damage knocking at our door. Shaking, no more misery. Can you just let us go back to being good old Canterbury? Nothing can make up for the lives that were lost. We just wish everything in this world didn't come without a cost. The people that give up their night and day, even the ones that have time to pray, are the ones that give this city something to fight for. No more, no more, no more. We've had too much damage knocking at our door. No more shaking, no more misery. Just let us go back to being good old Canterbury. If we all stick together and give a hand, we can pick ourselves up from the gutter and rebuild our land. We can get through anything if we really try hard. And never, ever, never again will anything catch us off guard. We've had too much damage knocking at our door. No more shaking, no more misery. Can you?
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society, Auckland,
we will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.